When Melissa and I started Cults, Crimes, and Cabernet, it was just a conversation between two best friends about true crime over a glass of wine. It quickly grew into something much more. Our weekly wine night transformed from a casual chat into a passion for advocacy.
We were empowered to take action and use more than our voices to support families in their search for answers. After a year of covering different genres of cases, Whitney and I chose to narrow our focus and take a journey covering cold and unsolved cases in season 3.
So we invite you to pop a cork and grab a glass because we have work to do.
This is Cults, Crimes, and Cabernet.
This episode contains content that may be disturbing or sensitive to listeners. Discretion is advised.
Happy Monday.
Happy Monday. And this is the first week from recovering from CrimeCon. It's just been, I feel like that whole week we just kind of lost because I was so exhausted.
I agree. That's how I was. I definitely lounged around a lot and then finally got overwhelmed about all the stuff that I needed to accomplish.
Yes. Yes. It was okay. You had your week off. Now you got to get back into business. Yes. Our weekend off that we worked at.
It was so much fun. So
it was. The only really big things we've got is don't forget to become a member of our Patreon or Apple subscriptions. Now that we're live on it, we've got our first Wednesday episode coming out on that platform this week.
Yes, it's going to be exciting. We're going to chat about the Brian Schaefer case.
Yes, and that's one that we talk a lot about, or a lot of people get confused with the Brandon Lawson case because they're very, very similar, where these two young men just disappeared with no trace. And it's just very interesting. So we're going to chat about that one for a while.
Yeah, definitely mind-boggling cases there. What else do we got going on?
That's really it. I mean, we've nothing until the True Crime Podcast Festival. Mm-hmm. We may have some travel over the summer before then for our Merlot files. But outside of that, nothing until August.
I'm kind of bummed, but kind of excited to have this downtime before we go into the busy season again, mm-hmm. because our starting from what, August, September, October, those are all very, very busy months. So it's going to be nice to have a little downtime.
Yeah, it will. But don't think that we're not working, because this downtime over the summer is actually when our second podcast is going to be coming out.
Yes, Surviving Love. If you haven't followed any of the social medias, please go to it. Surviving Love Podcast. There is a trailer out there, mm-hmm. On all podcast platforms you can listen to. The actual episodes will start this summer, though, and it's going mm-hmm. to be a crazy ride.
Yes, it is. So go make sure you're subscribed now so you won't miss any of the episodes when they do drop. So make sure you're ready for it.
Yes, I will jump into my wine. I now have a wine subscription because I could not find any wines that I had not already drank before mm-hmm. locally. So luckily, this was my Mother's Day present.
Aww.
Yes, it's very nice. It's
happy Mother's Day yesterday.
Yes, you too. I know, it's crazy. We got so busy with our lives that we're like, oh yeah, we do get this one freaking day. Anyways, this wine is called Cape Route or Root, however your pronunciation of that is. Now, I had to Google what this type of wine is because I had never heard of it before. And now that I've Googled it, I'm like, no wonder. It's very selective. It is called it is a Pinotage or Pinotage. Yes. A Pinotage. It is a red wine grape that is only in South Africa. It only can grow in South Africa. It's cultivated there in 1925. It's kind of a cross between a Pinot Noir and, is it a Cinsault?
Spell it.
Cinsault.
Sure.
Yeah, that's a weird one. Typically, it produces deep red wine with a smoky, bramble, earthy flavor. Sometimes it has notes of bananas or tropical fruits. Very, very delish. This comes from, he's a South African born person. His name is Ernest Storm. He returns home every year for harvest. He practices minimal intervention winemaking to produce clean, fruit forward expressions of his grapes. It is delish. I'm not going to lie. Interesting. I haven't maybe it's because it's unusual and I haven't had this type before, and I've been bored with the other wines I've been drinking. When I took a drink of this, this is so good. It's dry, but flavorful. You know how sometimes when it's so dry that you really can't taste anything?
Yeah.
This is very flavorful. I would go ahead and do 4.5 knives.
Nice. Okay.
Yes, I like it.
Perfect.
I'm just going to jump right into my case for North Dakota.
Okay.
So like we said, we're coming off of that high from CrimeCon, and I'm so ready to use this platform to make some waves, as we say, in a few of these unsolved cases. However, my state this week of North Dakota, let me tell you, it was difficult. I texted Whitney multiple times saying, I have nothing. I literally have nothing going for me. I started out with one case, and it has some media attention to it. It's the case of Anita Knutson. I don't know if you've heard that about that one. She was a college student. She was going to school to be a teacher. I think she was only like 18 or 19 years old. She was murdered in her apartment. And this was quite a few years ago. I think it was early 2000s.
Okay.
But anyways, so I start researching that. And then it turns out they just made an arrest a few months ago. It was the roommate.
Oh my goodness.
Yes. So then I had to read up on that just because I found it incredibly insane that they didn't know all this time that it was the roommate.
Yeah.
But then I had to pick a new case. So yeah, but that's fine. So I ended up finding the missing person case of Christy Nickel. And this one definitely could use some more attention. And in my opinion, it could be solved. Sometimes you get those ones where you're like, this is such a random crime that we'll never know. But I do believe this could be solved. Another thing we always say is that it just takes that one person to come forward and give answers to all the questions that plague this family and community. So I believe it's out there, and that person is out there. They had to have told someone in my mind. We are traveling to Grand Forks, North Dakota. This is the third largest city in North Dakota. Do you happen to know the two other larger ones, Whitney?
Sioux Falls, or is that South Dakota?
I think that's South Dakota.
North Dakota. I have no idea.
There's a movie about one, Fargo.
Fargo.
And Bismarck.
I always forget that Fargo's in North Dakota.
I do too. I really do.
For some reason, I want it to be in Montana.
Yes. But let's just move it. It's fine.
Sure.
It's
fine. No problem.
There are about 60,000 people in the town, and that's from the 2020 census. So still in my mind, relatively small, but I guess for North Dakota, that's pretty large.
Yeah.
Before Europeans came over, the land where Grand Forks is now had been an important meeting and trading point for Native Americans. It's right there on the Red River. So this is kind of a spot that all of the Native Americans would meet, have their trades and that kind of stuff. Because it's right on the river, it also is prone to flooding as well. I was sort of shocked to find out that Grand Forks had a considerably higher crime rate than the average United States city. I was shocked. Compared to North Dakota, Grand Forks has a crime rate that is higher than 90% of the other state cities and towns of all sizes. So just within North Dakota, it's 90% more likely that crimes will happen. The chance that a person will become a victim of a violent crime in Grand Forks, such as like armed robbery, we got assault, murder, that type of thing, is 1 in 359, which is about 3 per 1,000 people. So it looks beautiful, not very populated, but it does have some crime going on. Jumping into the missing person case of Christy Nickel. Christy was born on November 8th of 1976. She was born with a mild intellectual disability, but this never held her back. She was very social, outgoing, and very much capable of living on her own. And that's what she was doing at the time of her disappearance. Living on her own, making her own decisions, going out, hanging with friends. That's kind of what she was all about. I know. Her family does say she had like the mental capacity of a 10-year-old, so she was very trusting, but was able to like take care of herself physically. Christy was last seen on October 3rd of 1996. She was last seen at one of her friends' apartments, and it was reported that she went to play bingo with a friend that night and won $500. In my mind, this should be an easy thing to cooperate, calling the bingo hall, getting the friend, but it's never been like set in stone that this was one of the last places that she was at. It's just reported. Her father didn't even know she had won $500 until she went missing and some friends started talking about it.
And they don't have, I wonder if they have CCTV or anything at the bingo hall.
There has been, I don't know if it's because it took a bit of time before police started looking for her, and that's why they never got any CCTV. I figure at a bingo hall there would be something, some
what
type
year
of
was
surveillance.
It again?
1996.
Surely.
I would think so. But that has never been substantiated 100%. It's just been reported.
Well, I would think there would be some sort of security at least watching the area with it being a location that money is going in and out of.
And $500 in 1996, I don't know what that equates to, but
like $16,000 now.
But I feel like they'd have to keep some type of record of that at the bare minimum. But I don't know.
Like a receipt book of some sort?
Yes, exactly. So she was reported missing a week later after this night, apparently at the bingo hall. But it wasn't the first time that Christy's father had tried to get her disappearance documented and file that report. A day after he couldn't get a hold of her and he hadn't heard from her, he actually tried to go get file a police report. But like so many other times before, police said, hey, wait 72 hours. She is an adult. Such and such. And so the family started their own search. They got everyone together they knew, went to all of the places that she would typically frequent, the bingo hall, a couple of places around town that she would go and hang out with friends. They came up with nothing. So it was a week later when they finally went back to police and filed that report. At first, law enforcement believe she vanished on her own. She had $500. She's 19. She did frequently sleep on friends' couches and kind of lived this, she could do whatever she wanted lifestyle. And so they did not suspect foul play in the beginning. And of course, I think this became an issue later on. You know, the first 48, that's a show for a reason, guys.
It is.
Mike Nickel, who is Christy's father, stated they could have done more investigation, but they didn't. If they had taken that report that night, he's talking about the very first night, I could see something happening. But you know, within 24 hours, I mean, you could be anywhere in 24 hours. He's always been pretty upset and pretty vocal about his thoughts on how the police handled his daughter's disappearance right from the beginning. There are various reports as well that stated Christy was telling her friends almost in a bragging manner that she had started dating this guy and his name was Todd. Remember that for later on.
Okay.
This person, if it was true that she really was dating this guy or not, he never came forward. Does that mean he had something to do with it, or was it something to do with her trusting nature? Her brother Lonnie stated that Christy was so trusting that if someone asked her to do something like, hey, can you help me pick up these bricks? Or I don't know why I thought of bricks, but why is anyone picking up bricks?
Yeah, one. But To me, it sounds very much how Ted Bundy would pretend he had a broken arm and ask for assistance loading groceries or things of that nature. It seems that she would be trusting of that type of scenario.
That is a more logical scenario
than picking up bricks.
Than picking up random bricks. He also said that if someone offered her a piece of candy, she would go with them. But that's your typical mentality of a 10-year-old. Police did put her in the high-risk victim category because of this. Now, as I was doing this research, I was thinking, maybe police didn't know the severity of Christie's disability, and that's why they kind of pushed it off. Like, oh, she's 19. Maybe her dad wasn't, like, forthcoming. Because I know when it's like, close family members, that's not what I'm going to lead with. Oh, yeah, mm-hmm. Here's her medical history. I would be, my daughter is missing. She's, and then they're like, how old is she? She's 19. Mm-hmm. And then their next words are, wait 72 hours.
I mean, with the fact that she was able to live on her own, even though she was a little bit immature due to her mental instabilities, I don't see how that's, I don't know that I would have led with that information either.
Exactly. Exactly. But I do believe, if that hadn't been said at that first day point, police may have looked into it a bit harder if they knew that. Yes. Because once they do know this, they're like, hey, she is in the high risk category to be a victim because of this. So they had to do other processes were in place for this.
Sure.
So this case goes cold very, very quickly because there's nothing. There's no crime scene. There's no evidence of foul play. There's literally nothing. She just disappeared like so many of these other ones that we talk about. A few years after her initial disappearance, a new detective was assigned to the case, which this happens a lot. Every few years, a new detective gets assigned, which is great because I think new sets of eyes can make all of the difference. This new detective's name was Mike Scholes. Scholes stated when he took over the case, he said, a lot of times it's not what you see, but it's what you don't see. You know what it is? What are we seeing here? Well, what's missing? Because there was no crime scene, there was no event, there was no police call of somebody screaming or a disturbance call where this person was involved in. Or reported threats or anything. She's just here today and then she vanishes. So I thought this was powerful in a few different ways because I think he gets it. Like, there's nothing to say that this is foul play at all. However, it's very unusual and I think he's definitely taking time to look into it a bit more.
Yeah.
Those fresh eyes could make all the difference. Now, in 1998, so this is about 2 years after her disappearance, mm-hmm. a tip was submitted about a possible connection between Christie's disappearance and that of the suspected serial killer, Floyd Tapson. Never heard of this guy in my life.
Neither have I.
Yes. This honestly was the first lead that police could really dig into and they could see a connection. And so they started following up on this lead. So Tapson's middle name was Todd, and he was known to go by that name, like as his first name, like, hey, my name's Todd, which was her boyfriend's.
Okay. Yes.
That no one had ever met this guy before. This Tapson man was also from North Dakota. He was tried and convicted of the attempted murder, kidnapping, and rape of a mentally disabled woman as well. It gets worse. So this is kind of how mm-hmm. that went down. Tapson was a group home manager, and he would work for these developmentally delayed individuals. He'd work in their group homes. This just pisses me off. As his profession, he is supposed to be taking care of these individuals.
Yeah.
So apparently he met this young woman at one of the homes. He drives her to his home where he restrains her, sexually assaults her, and then he drives her to a secluded area where he shoots her twice. Once in the head, by the way.
Oh okay. Gosh.
Then he just leaves her there to die. She is an incredible fighter because after all of this has happened to her, she is still able to crawl through barbed wire and get help from a nearby house. She survives. It is remarkable to me when anybody survives being shot in the head. First of all, that is absolutely insane.
Right.
But after she was sexually assaulted, held captive, then she has to get herself through barbed wire. No.
Yeah.
Yes. And she testifies against him in court.
Holy shit.
Picks him out, testifies against him. I am like, way to go, girl. She survived and would go on to testify against him in trial. Like, she is amazing. End of story.
She's a badass.
She is a badass. Yes, I could not explain it better. Yes, that's a more appropriate word. It must have been so difficult to do what she did, and I could not be more proud of her courage. Floyd Tapson was convicted and sentenced to life in prison with the possibility of parole. He would be able to receive that parole after 30 years, and he ended up only being actually convicted of the attempted murder and kidnapping. They dropped the sexual assault charges as a part of the plea agreement. And that pisses me off. But it's all for him probably to stay off the registry, is my understanding.
Probably.
But he's a piece of garbage.
Mm-hmm.
Floyd was known to visit one of the homes that Christy had frequented to visit her friend. So he was known to be in that specific group home.
Mm-hmm.
He didn't live in North Dakota at the time of her disappearance. However, he was known to be in that area that month that she disappeared. This is just super coincidental, people. I don't know. It's a lot of coincidences racking up, definitely. Detectives on Christie's case actually went to visit Floyd in prison. He always maintained he was innocent in Christie's disappearance, but his story often changed. Many inconsistencies in his statements over the years, and a few times law enforcement actually proved that he was lying about various things in his statement concerning Christie. He did take a lie detector test at one point over the years. The exact findings have never been released. However, police state that the test did not clear him. So in my mind, it's inconclusive, which it is what it is. It's about 50-50 regardless. They went back multiple times throughout the year to talk to him, see how much his story changed, see if they could get anything else out of him. And once they realized that they weren't going to get any more information out of him, they stopped visiting him. And I'm like, well, good. He can sit there and rot until he wants to talk.
Sure can.
Carla Beth Anderson and Renee Lynn Nelson, both of these women, he was also a suspect in their disappearance as well. Once again, after they can't get any information out of Floyd, everything goes cold. And no new leads are coming in and no new information or evidence that might point to Floyd being the person responsible comes out either. It seems like they cannot catch a break in this case. That is until 2004. Remains are found off a Montana highway in a spot that was pretty close to where Floyd had shot the initial woman twice, once in the head, you know, the one that went against him in court. So it wasn't too far from that spot. They find remains. And through the autopsy and forensic testing, they were able to determine that the remains were that of a mentally disabled woman. So of course, she's from this area. They already had their eyes on Floyd. The family was really, really hopeful. And I know that sounds horrible, but they were hoping that they could actually, you know what happened to Christine. However, it did come out that it was not a DNA match, and to this day, those remains have not been identified.
Oh.
I know. This is just like, what the crap?
I wonder, they need to get in touch with DNA Doe Project.
I agree. They really do. When the writer of Inforum.com, which they wrote probably the most extensive article on Christie's case that there is out there, because there's not a lot. because nothing really happened in the case because no one investigated it or anything like that right at first. So it wasn't, it didn't make news or headlines or anything like that because it was just a 19-year-old that went on her way. So it wasn't reported like crazy. However, in this news outlet, they did amazing. The writer of this article had asked Christie's dad if he thought that Floyd Tapson committed his daughter's murder. And he says, I wasn't there, but I would say that the circumstances would indicate that he did. And I would also say that nobody else has surfaced. There isn't any significant circumstantial, physical, or anything else right now. And so that's going against him. But to come right out and say he did it, I don't know for sure. I'm assuming he did, but that's basically an assumption. That's isn't 100%. And even with the confession, you still got to prove it. So to say with absolute certainty, there's no way I can say that. Definitely a lot of coincidences in this case of her being one of his victims. Definitely nowhere near enough to even charge him with anything to do with Christie, let alone get a conviction. And at this point, the article had stated, yes, a confession would probably be the only thing that would start this case up rolling again. Mm-hmm. And a confession and then him telling where her remains are at. I think that's the only way, but it's doable. It's doable.
It is doable.
If you have any information about the 1996 disappearance of Christie Nicol, please reach out to the FBI at 612-376-3200. I don't know why it shocked me that the FBI was the listed contact for this, but I love it. Christie in 1996 was described as a white female. She was about 5'4" tall. She weighed about 100 pounds, has brown hair, blue greenish eyes, and would be about 46 years old today.
I know.
This is just, well, like, she just seems so full of life. She has that huge smile. It just sucks.
Yeah.
Because she probably was trusting, and that was a lot. Theories that she would have went willingly with this person, especially if she thought he was her boyfriend.
Absolutely.
And then something happened. Or, okay, if it had nothing to do with Floyd, let's say she won the $500 and at the bingo and someone, crime of opportunity, wanted to rob her. However, I feel like it wouldn't be as planned, and then they would most likely find out about it a lot quicker if that is what went down. But
could have.
I don't know. It's just definitely, it's a sad one that I feel like could be solved.
Mm-hmm. I feel like it could be solved as well.
If douchebag would admit it. So maybe we should write him.
Let's do it.
Yes.
We've that been saying be we wanted to do it.
I know. I'm just like, it scares me.
It is kind of scary.
Yes. But we have a P.O. box. We'll be safe.
We'd be fine.
We tough. And that is the end of my North Dakota.
That was a good one. I know you were worried about not being able to find adequate information, but that was a good one.
Yay! I know. I was a bit nervous. And typically, I do not like to wait till close to last minute, but this one, it was right up to the starting point of recording, guys.
All right. So just remember that we will be there for you no matter where,
no matter who.